While you listen to this episode, probably on the go, you don't have to worry about taking notes. We've got that all covered. When you go visit our podcast page on digitalsocietyschool.org, you will find a full transcript, links, and more information for your own reference and to refer to the inspirational content to your friends and colleagues.
Dear future, I'm ready because Earth is. And in the same way, if we respect that life is, future is, Earth is.
This is Dear Future, I'm Ready, a podcast brought to you from Amsterdam by Digital Society School and Transformational Studio. Your hosts for today are Carola Vashore and Marco van Hout.
Dr. Anne Stemroos is a thought leader and an architect with a doctorate in technology. She has over 25 years of experience in creative leadership and strategic design. Between 2005 and 2015, she acted as the first design director at Kone Corporation, a world-leading elevator and escalator company. In 2016 to 2018, she was appointed as the first ever chief design officer of a city, namely the city of Helsinki. She has also had a professorship in creative leadership at the Aalto University, and she has participated as an expert in many different EU forums. And she was the member of the World Design Capital 2022 selection committee by World Design Organization. Currently, she is speaking, lecturing, writing, mentoring, and catalyzing change. A lot of things. She is curious about the future of cities, architectures, and urbanism. And she believes in collaboration, co-creation, and creative collectives. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Thank you very much, Marco and Carola. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's lovely to have you, Anne. Welcome. So as you know, this podcast is called 21 for 21, and it's a podcast about transformation. And it's all of this messiness that is happening right now around us, that for some, it becomes an excruciatingly painful situation. And for others, it's an inspiration to transform and design and reinvent, reconsider and imagine a wonderful future. So today, we're going to talk with you about design, society and transformation. And we are so curious about what you have to say.
Yeah, so actually, Anne, we noticed in your biography that you have been the first in many things, really pioneering roles. And you name yourself also as creative catalyst. You refer to yourself as creative catalyst. And that's exactly how we see you. So as a creative catalyst. So you have been working with artifacts, services, systems, and now also with broader societal domains. So we actually hope that you have an answer to almost everything that is happening right now. At least that's what we hope. And especially because we think that design might be able to help us as the old ways fail to deliver currently. And so challenges arise on so many fronts. And we are so curious to hear what you make of all of this.
Well, oh, that was a huge question. Well, but if I start from the point that I used to sail, my father, he used to sail, wide ocean, and also he was doing offshore racing. So I have spent, 60% of my life on sea during the summer times here in Finland. But basically, the thing is why I'm talking about this, that it's about navigating, how you navigate uncharted waters. And transformation and change is exactly this kind of point where you have to create your own map. And that is challenging, it's inspirational, and it's quite tough sometimes. But if we think it from the point of view, let's say, trend research and future foresight, so there is a kind of a tool how to navigate. I learned this recently from a very nice trend researcher from Sweden. And he was talking about that first you set the now. You have to understand what is going on now. Then you have to read the transformation, the change that is happening. You have to somehow grasp it or take the essential out of it. And then comes the after. What is going to happen after this huge transformation? And some people can go even beyond that point. They can see, they can foresee the next emerging thing. And I think this is a kind of very simple way to see it. Now, transformation, after that, and then what could come next. But to define then what is the now and what is the real transformation going on and what comes after that and then going even beyond that, that is always, of course, interesting or also quite difficult. So,
of course it is. Yeah. That's why we need people like you and we need designers, right? I wrote a book in 2015 called Change Ahead, a very prophetic title. If I had known what was coming at us, I would have probably thought of a different title. But in Change Ahead, I actually use the analogy of sailing, and the model that I present uses the acronym SAIL: sensing, analyzing, inventing, and learning. And this last bit is quite interesting because once we start imagining that future, what we start creating is one possible solution. And that solution has to live in the new now, to follow your model that you were talking about. So how do you look at that? How do you look at the act of design in the context of transformation? So understanding what's happening, proposing an alternative, but then also tracking what is this doing? How have things changed? And how have things moved because of the interventions of design in a moving context? How do you look at that?
Well, I think that first and foremost, again, I have to say that you have to follow very, very many things what's going on in the world, not just, you know, design or architecture, but anything what is happening, because you have to have the complete understanding or close to complete understanding of the big picture. Otherwise, you might navigate wrong, right? So you can't just focus on what's going on in design, for example, or what's going on in urban development. You have to understand what is the change in people's lifestyle, how the work is going to change, what are the materials, new materials that are emerging, et cetera, et cetera. But one tool that we have sort of forgotten in our times is something that we as designers are very good at, namely utopias. We can create utopias. We can visualize utopias. And I'm now referring, let's say that there is a lot of discussion about the post-COVID city and the next urban environment, what's going on there. But it's in a very practical level, in a very modest level, one can say. But if we compare that to, let's say, Archigram, that was a group of rebel architects after the Second World War in England, in London, and who created these fancy ideas about the futures we can foresee, and how accurate they were actually, or are, because now we are living the walking city, the instant city, etc., that they created during their time. And they were just visualizations. They have several exhibitions around them. But they were so powerful because of their visual appearance that people partly started to follow. And on the other hand, it was also it gave a kind of intuitional guiding lines, sort of. Mm-hmm. So what I'm looking for now is that all the designers and architects, that they somehow take these unique tools that they can use and create hope for the future.
Yeah, this is super inspiring because I also see design as this kind of revolutionary tool. And just like you mentioned yourself, you refer to yourself as catalyst for change. But what I'm sometimes afraid of is when I hear designers say all this, is that we kind of get this new colonization of design again for solutions for future that we want to achieve and that we want to see. So what is your vision on this kind of, perhaps even threat of design being a colonizing force instead of this revolutionary force?
Oh, well, that's interesting also, because I just listened last week, Don Norman, and he was talking about this very much, and the ethics of design and designers, and how we should really take seriously that we design with people, not only for people, but with people. And yet, at the same time, I can see that this design thinking, it has sort of democratized design in many ways and democratize the co-creation process, solutions, etc. But at the same time, just in the beginning of this year, I wrote about the, how should I title it? I think it was From Non-Design to Strong Design. Meaning that when we do co-create things and we have all these post-its on the wall and everybody feels happy, so who is going to take responsibility of that solution that comes out of that? Nobody, because it's a common ground. So I started to think about that maybe, maybe in the future, we will see the comeback of auteur, you know, the designer, but in a different way, not just, you know, a grand creative persona, but more like a responsible individual who is guiding the things into right direction in the best way we can do it. But somehow I'm not that sure that all this nice, let's do this together will actually end up to real innovative new solutions that we desperately need if we think about the several crises that we are living through. Because we all know that we have the pandemic crisis, we had the biodiversity crisis, we have climate crisis, and we have social sustainability crisis. And at the same time,
Yeah. But I think that as much as that we have different crises, also strong design, love that. Strong design takes all kinds, takes complementarity, takes harmony, takes people who are more extreme in the ideas and people who are less extreme in the ideas, not because we seek consensus, but because the context is so turbulent that we have to try different alternatives all at the same time, seeing what's going to work best. And perhaps one of the biggest blessings and of this time as a designer is that you can't remove context from the equation anymore. Where we would be able to design outside of the context acontextually, now doing that is just an illusion. It's of course it can lead to wonderful artistic expression, but it becomes literally removed from reality, and it can be wonderful to inspire and to spark the imagination. But in the end, strong design of course survives in real life, in real context, with real people, and that will demand solutions as diverse as the peoples themselves, as well as, and that's something that we learned from your work in Helsinki, of course, spaces where people come together to ask new questions and seek for new forms of design. So tell us about your experience in Helsinki, and perhaps introduce a bit of a curiosity to the question, what might the role of libraries be in all of this?
Well, I think that in my mind, the whole city could be a library or a learning space. There is a beautiful story about Louis Kahn, or actually the architect Louis Kahn, who stated that, this is free quotation now, that a city is something where a small boy, when walking through, could see something that he would love to do his whole life. So city should be inspirational in this way, so that it's empowering and inspiring and giving people opportunities in many ways, and also opportunity for learning. And in my mind, let's say in our climate, when we have winter that is over half year long, mostly, so libraries, open, welcoming libraries are like parks or streets during the summertime. So they are the same continuum in my mind. But I think that, what should I say? Maybe I entered the city organization in the wrong time. Sorry to say that, but there were so many changes going on that trying to make yet another change through design thinking and strategic design that was almost mission impossible, unfortunately. But it was a good learning experience because I noticed that this kind of very, very big systems, they are very, very hard to change.
Absolutely.
And I think I was a little bit too over-optimistic when I joined the city organization. But on the other hand, during my time there, I noticed that there are individuals who desperately want to change something that they are dealing with. And somehow there are too many obstacles all the time. And because a city is also a political institution, it's not that easy like in a corporate world. So if the CEO wants to change something, everything goes, you know, on that way or this way. So somehow, how should I put this? One designer can't change anything in a big system if she or he doesn't get support from the top, from the very top, and also freedom to navigate along his or her vision. Because I read early in my early years at Kone from a book that creatives are never, ever loyal for organizations.
I identify with that, yeah. Yes.
You know, they are only loyal for their inner vision. And if they don't get the freedom to follow that, they leave and go to another organization where they try again and again and again. And I can see that usually when I have changed my role or job or whatever, the reason has been exactly this thing, that I couldn't follow my vision anymore for some reason or another.
Yeah, I recognize that very much in myself as well. But to be honest, what the reference you made to corporations, and I fully appreciate that that might be your experience. My experience of more than 25 years in large corporates is that seemingly there is a hierarchical structure and a hierarchical order of things, but there is a lot of theater as well. There is a lot of dancing to the tune that is set by the C-suite or by the CEO, and that doesn't always lead to actual real innovation, a real change, a real traction on the floor. So every context has its own challenges, freedom being the key, absolute key word, because freedom is about being able to bring something to the broader group that might inspire someone else, just like that little kid walking through the city, so that that person thinks, wow, I'd like to do that too. I'd like to try some of that. And then that is that movement and this inspiration that starts leading to change actually taking place instead of just being something that we talk about. And it's a pendulum, isn't it? Because you can't design in isolation, but the minute you try and design within a group and change things for the better, sometimes you feel, as they say in Dutch, like you're screaming in the desert.
This also reminds me of something I read a long time ago, that at one point they mentioned cities are the new nations. Eh? And I love the way you just mentioned being true to your inner voice. And in a way, I've seen also cities as having this inner voice themselves as a system, as an entity as well. And what would your observation be of cities as having an inner voice, being a catalyst for change as an entity themselves? And how can they be more connected in order to actually thrive and drive a transformation on a perhaps global scale? I don't know.
Well, like I already mentioned that during the past, let's say 18 months or so, there has been much more discussion about the urban development and city concepts and city ideas than during the past 18 years or 10 years. So the time is right now to discuss about the post-COVID city and its embodiments. And I think that cities, a friend of mine actually said that cities are like trees. They are slow and they are fast at the same time. You know, the leaves comes every year. They renew themselves every year, but at the same time, it takes a long time to grow to the heights, so to speak. So I think that cities try to understand at this point of transformation their identity more and more. And then they try to make it greener, safer, happier, healthier, more human and more equal than before. So there is now a good combination of ingredients, including human nature connection. Also, how we revitalize that lost human nature connection in our urban environment and cities. There is a discussion about 15-minute city, even 1-minute city, 10-minute city, biophilic cities, forest towns, eco-villages, you know, anything you can describe in terms of combining the urban environment with some green and blue spaces. By the way, do you know what are blue spaces? You are living in the country of blue spaces.
Yes.
Come on. All waterfront areas. And now only recently they have done studies that these waterfront areas, so-called blue spaces, that they really activate people to move. And it's very important for our health and well-being and our mental health.
How important this is, and to this point of you being a pioneer, this only confirms that, because it's interesting that in the words that you mentioned, you didn't mention technology just once. You didn't mention data just once. You focused on the real muse of cities and of society, and that is citizens, that is people, and how what we design, what we develop together has to be in service of that whole, and not just applying technology and applying efficiency and looking for budgetary maximization of every taxpayer euro that is invested into a city, which we know that in the end, if we look at it in such a myopic way and such a narrow metric, it's not going to lead to the type of thriving that we want within cities, to the well-being that we want within cities, because as you say, how do you measure the impact of blue and green spaces on people's hearts and people's minds? That's, it becomes about so many more things than just applying top quality engineering, developing best in class infrastructure, use of materials, use of technology. And it really becomes a matter of designing for thriving cities, for a better future for us all.
Here, one thing that I learned in the beginning of this year. You know, it happened that as an architect, I love whiteboard or white paper to start with, you know, the empty white paper. And the first of this year, it happened to be Sunday, I think, or Saturday or Sunday, I took a big white paper and started to draw a chart, a map for myself, to navigate towards the future, so to speak. And a kind of inspirational thing that I put together here and there, some highlights. And suddenly I realized that, well, yeah, now I have my map for the next 20 years to come. And into the heart of that, in the middle, I put the word eudaimonia. I don't know where it came to me, but this old Aristotelian idea of happiness, not as a kind of thing that you are waiting, something will happen to you, something happy, happiness is coming to you. No, but doing and living well. And I added there, doing and living well with nature. Meaning that you are actively trying to rebound yourself, to build this connection towards nature, this inherent connection that we have. And also, like Aristotle said, that when you are doing and living based on the virtues, you might end up to eudaimonia, happiness. So it's an active work based on virtues, how you can maybe achieve this idea of eudaimonia. And I started to read all kinds of things related to nature. And the best thing I found was Edward Wilson's book titled Biophilia. It's an old book from 1980s, and Edward Wilson is an American biologist, and he's considered, you know, the next, you know, the big names in ecology. But this idea of biophilia as the human bond between other species, it's lovely. And he's not just describing our DNA and our connection to nature and animals and insects and birds and everything, but he is also opening up an avenue that part of this biophilia, part of this understanding is our cultural heritage, is arts and sciences. So he's drawing a big, beautiful chart in front of us so that if we do this in respect with all the things on planet, we will all become happy. So it was very eye-opening for me to start to see also the urban environment and the city from that perspective. And lately I have especially read about architect Kengo Kuma, for example, because he has done his first sketches or plans for biophilic buildings, so that he's bringing the nature in and it's breathing out, sort of that the building itself is a continuum of nature. And if we think, for example, the early architects like of modernism, like Frank Lloyd Wright, he's falling water and he's many of his buildings, they were very, very biophilic by approach because they respected the nature. They gave space for the nature. They didn't occupy the nature. So I think that what we will see in the future is more respect for green and blue spaces in terms of urban environment, but also, of course, the more understanding of sustainability and climate change and biodiversity.
Now, this is interesting. Is this also your new definition of smart cities in that sense? Because, of course,
What I titled my next book, hopefully, or publication, I titled it The Nature Smart City.
Right.
Why I did that? Because Howard Gardner, he created the theory of multiple intelligences, so that people have seven different kind of intelligences. Could be literacy, could be bodily kinesthetic, could be musical, etc. But he added later the eighth one, the naturalistic intelligence or nature smart. Yeah. And that intelligence involves how sensitive an individual is to the nature and the world. And now if I consider myself as a Scandinavian person, we tend to have this very strong connection and understanding towards nature here. So I started to think about, well, this nature smart, this is something. It goes beyond everything else, technology, data, digitalization, even it goes beyond human-centric smart cities that they tend to speak nowadays. Because this is that we have to consider nature first in order to survive. Seriously.
Of course. It's so hopeful and so inspiring listening to you. I think, oh gosh, we as society, as humankind, we got a bit sidetracked, a bit distracted by what we thought we were so smart and intelligent and quirky and special. And we got disconnected from that, which you call nature as something being beyond. It's beyond in a 360 degree level. It's on beyond towards the outside, towards the inside, in every possible thinkable direction. It's been there all along. And we just need to reconnect with it, which is why we always like to close our podcast with asking our guests to complete the sentence, "Dear future, I am ready," and share with us what kind of future they are ready for. So with that, you help also inspire others. You become an imaginative source of what could be so that others can think, oh, I'd like to do that too. Could you please complete the sentence for us, Anna, saying, "Dear future, I am ready."
Oh my goodness. How can I say it with one sentence? Let's put it this way. Dear future, I'm ready because Earth is. Now, this sounds a little bit tricky, but Louis Kahn, who is my master, my icon, what comes to architecture in many ways, because he was mostly philosopher of architecture. He once described that he said that you can describe architecture, but the definition is escaping all the time. Because architecture is. And in the same way, if we respect that life is, future is, earth is, I think that's the only answer. And I'm now, I quote Alan Watts, who has said that the only way to make sense out of change is to plunge into it, move with it, and join the dance.
The dance. Yes, wow. I love that quote. I had it on a website previously. I love it. But it's true. We are part of everything. And everything is part of us. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful, Anna.
This is
Thank
so nice.
You.
Life is, and then we can say Anne Stenros is.
No. Hooray. I'm just a visitor here. I'm only a visitor on this earth.
We all are.
Yeah. But when you start to understand that it's not about you, it's all about this gorgeous life.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Anne.
Spoken from the heart by Anne Stenros. Thank you so much. It's been super inspiring. Such a privilege to speak to you.
Thank you. Pleasure to discuss with you. As I said, that we need this kind of adult discussion.
Dear future.
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 Dear future, I'm ready.
This is Dear Future, I'm Ready.
Dear future, I'm ready.
Thank you for listening to Dear Future, I'm Ready. Curious about our next or previous episodes? Please find us on digitalsocietyschool.org or on your favorite podcast or music platform under Dear Future, I'm Ready, and subscribe today. Are you or your team interested in really getting hands-on with the practice of transformation design, sustainability by design, or diversity and inclusion? Check out our professional courses on digitalsocietyschool.org and sign up today for one of our truly transformational learning experiences. For help at an organizational level, check out Transformational Studio, a transformation design agency with the aim of revolutionizing change through design and making transformation irresistible. Check them out at transformation.studio.